Welcome to the West Coast Project podcast for Better Call Saul. My name is Mike, and I'm here today to talk about episode 11 of season 2. Better Call Saul, our podcast is full of spoilers, so please expect to hear spoilers from future episodes if you do listen to the podcast. And this is episode 11, but we're going to talk quickly about episode 10. We skip over episode 10 because Saul's not in it. We're trying to build up the series and look back at some flashbacks of Saul and just remind everybody of what he does in the series to get ready for Better Call Saul when it comes out next year. But episode 10 didn't have Saul in it, but it was a really kind of important episode because they show in the very cold open the beginning of starting to see more evidence of the plane crash. So there's guys pulling stuff out of the pool and bagging it and labeling it along the pool to show us more evidence of dramatic pieces of wreckage and belongings of people in this plane crash that we eventually know will come to be. There was an interesting name game being played in season 2. I don't know if you all saw it or if you paid attention to it, but the titles of the episodes were: number one was 737, number two, Grilled, number three, Bit by a Dead Bee, number four, Down, five, Breakage, six, Peekaboo, seven, Negro y Azul, eight, Better Call Saul. This was Saul's first episode. Nine was 4 days Out, 10 was Over, 11, Mandala, 12, Phoenix, and 13, ABQ. And Vince Gilligan played a little bit of a game with these titles as the... if you put some of them together, you get a pretty interesting message. If you look at episode 1, 4, 10, and 13, they read 737, Down, Over, ABQ. So that, of course, tells us about the incident with the plane and the problems that we see arising from Jane and her father and some other stuff coming up. Also in episode 10, Walt and Jesse are eating lunch, and Walt does tell Jesse about his current health status. It's looking better. And he says, Jesse kind of asks him what's going to happen next, and Walt says, we sell off what we have, and then I guess I'm done. And that would have seemed to have made sense at that point, as we talked about in the last podcast. Walt's got some money now, and he's looking like he's a little bit farther past his health problems, and he's going to be... kind of ready to face life on the square now. He's got what he needs from what he's done so far with the meth operation. Of course, we know that doesn't happen. Some other interesting things that happened in episode 10. Walt explains the punch of the paper dispenser a little bit here. We get a number of scenes of his bruised hand from punching the paper dispenser, and he says that. What looks like to be a celebration party that Skyler's having for Walt. He says, when I got my cancer, I asked myself, why me? And when I got the good news, I asked myself the same thing. And I think that's evidence of Walt being not in control. And he does not like not being in control. And I think that's the frustration he felt when he punched the paper dispenser in episode 9 of season 2. It wasn't exultory. It wasn't happy or celebratory as one might think when he was punching that paper dispenser out of pure emotion. It was like frustration of not having control. But when he makes that statement, when I got my cancer, I asked myself, why me? When I got the good news, I asked myself the same thing. When he says that at this party, it leaves a lot of puzzled faces around the room at the party, and we see, you know, they focus in on those faces. You may also remember episode 10 for the one where Walt gives Junior the tequila shots at the pool, and Junior gets sick in the pool. And then Hank tries to stop him. Walt gives him like three or four consecutive shots, and Walt says, this is my house, my son, my tequila. It's all about control, Walt wanting the control and not wanting to let Hank interfere with his decisions, however poor they were with the tequila and Junior. We also see an interesting thing in 210. Walt's water heater is causing the water to be all brackish and brown looking and crappy looking. So that's where we see him go in, and he looks at the water heaters in the store. And we see an interesting evolution of the water heaters, which culminates a couple seasons later with Crawl Space. But it was actually very interesting to see these future hints of what might happen. The plane crash, the control, the water heater. And it was actually pretty hard to stop doing a review of season 2, episode 10, but no Saul. So here we are with episode 11. So diving right into season 2, episode 11, Mandala. It was originally aired on May 17th, 2009. It was written by George Mastras and directed by Adam Bernstein. And we start out by seeing Combo walking around on the corner and ultimately getting shot by that kid on the bike. We learn later who that kid is, but Combo gets shot and killed by this kid as he's in, on his little drug run, his little drug distribution route there. We see Walt at the chemo treatment center, and he finds out that the chemo treatment has worked well enough for Walt to get the lobectomy, the surgery to remove what they couldn't do before he had the remission. So Walt agrees immediately to the surgery, even faster than Skyler. Surprising Skyler, but I think it's more evidence of Walt just immediately jumping into control. He wants that surgery. The doctors say you don't have to have the surgery, but if you don't have the surgery, it's just a matter of waiting until the cancer comes back. So I think it's Walt's evidence of taking his control, what control he has anyway, over that cancer and taking the first step instead of waiting to see if it spreads or not on its own. Next, we see Skinny Pete and Jesse talking. And they're feeling pretty insecure about their future. If you think about what just happened, Combo's been shot, Badger's been arrested, and Skinny Pete comes to the conclusion that he's out. There's just no future for him in this anymore. So Walt and Jesse go to Saul for counsel. Now, we talked about Saul being 80% comedic and 20% serious, and Saul is definitely serious here. Saul steps immediately into the consigliere role that we've talked about before, but he is the consigliere that they need at this point in the show. So Saul asks some pointed questions. Can all of this be traced back to you, meaning the shooting with Combo? He asks Walt, what's your health situation? And then he counsels them both that, hey, this happened and it's terrible, but a dead guy is occupational hazard in what you're doing. He's just dead factually concise with his statements, and there's very little humor and very much, it's all business. It's all direct business between Walt and Saul and Jesse. So Saul also asks, how much product do you have on hand? What's the status of your inventory? They tell him 38 and change, and he says, is that in ounces or grams? And they say, no, in pounds. So they've made a lot of meth now, and Saul finally realizes that this is something that could be huge. And I think that gets Saul's full attention and realizes these guys aren't just playing around with this, that they're really involved in it. So Saul tells them, you're sitting on a gold mine, and let's start with some tough love. You guys both suck at peddling meth. And this was a message, I think, at the time that these guys needed to hear. And Saul knew it, and he was the perfect one to deliver it.
Let's start with some tough love, all right? Ready for this? Here goes. You two suck at peddling meth. Period. So give up on trying to do it all yourselves. Hell, I'm amazed you got this far.
Look, we are not going to deal with another high-level distributor. No, thank you. We have been down that road.
What, some tattooed speed freak? No. What you two need is an honest-to-God businessman, right? Somebody who treats your product like the simple, high-margin commodity that it is. Somebody who ships out of town, deals only in bulk. Someone who's been doing this for 20 years and never been caught.
You know someone like that?
Let's just say I know a guy who knows a guy. Who knows another guy.
So Saul even says that he doesn't even know the guy's name of the guy who knows a guy who knows a guy. And we kind of believe him at this point. Saul's a middleman, but a safe middleman. He's keeping himself kind of one step removed from the real super dangerous parts of this business that he deals with. I remember at the time Saul being just exactly what Walt and Jesse needed. In a criminal's context, that's what they needed. they're dicking around with these street guys. They're doing things in a very amateurish way. People are getting killed. People are getting arrested. They've hit their ceiling. They've hit their limit, their ability to do this. Had they not found Saul, they would have been essentially street peddlers with these same problems over and over, competing with the other low-life street peddlers in the vicious world of just trying to sell a teenth at a time, getting busted, getting killed, getting caught, getting hurt, not really rising above to the level that they needed to be. They have 38 pounds of meth now. They have to find a better way to do this. And Saul gives them the avenue to this. I know it's a horrible, in real life, it's an avenue to destruction more quickly, but it is a more successful answer to the drug empire that they're trying to enter into here. So at the time, this looked like Saul was just what they needed in order for the series to take a step up in Walter White evolving into this Heisenberg guy and just making it more serious. It's all more serious now. It's at a whole new level. And we needed Saul to step that up, or we needed somebody, it turns out to be Saul, to step that up and make this a little bit more serious of an enterprise. In the next scene, we see Jane and Jesse. They're sitting in Jesse's house with nicer chairs now in the living room, and they're watching a video. But Jesse is really super distraught from Combo still. So he asks Jane to leave so he can get high. She asks him why, what's up, and he tells her about Combo and what happened. Jane sees Jesse in this depression and tries to get him to come to a meeting with her. And this is an important crossroads for both of them. Jane tells him getting high won't help, and Jesse insists that she leave. So if this had gone any other way, we can see how Jesse's life might have changed and gone into a better direction. If he had gone out with Jane just to take a walk or just to leave the house at that moment, just doing something other than getting high. But that doesn't happen, of course. Jesse gets high. Eventually, Jane gets high with him, and then we see some other things spiral kind of downward. But that's how Jane and Jesse kind of enter into their drug phase of their relationship. The next scene is the first scene we see of Pollos Hermanos. Gus is directing his staff. I remember this scene the first time I saw it and kind of wondering what would happen as we scanned around the various people in the restaurant. Who was that drug connection? Who was the guy who knew the guy who knew the guy? Who was the guy in that formula? We do see Gus a few times. He's managing his people, telling them to do these minor little tasks around the restaurant. Walt's in there waiting for the meeting, and Jesse comes in high and hungover and late for the meeting. Gus comes over and asks if everything's okay in his managerial role. Gus looks like the typical middle manager, too. He's wearing the short-sleeved button-down shirt with a tie, just very typecast as a bland fast-food restaurant manager. But nothing happens. Nothing develops. Jesse gets frustrated and leaves, and that's the end of that scene. Next, we see Skylar with her doctor. She's getting the ultrasound. We see the baby on the fetal monitor, and that looks pretty cool. The baby looks happy and healthy, moving around. And Walt is late to this appointment as well. So we see a little bit of a hint of Walt being late to things that are very important other than his drug operation. They decide to pick a birth date. It's a C-section birth date, but not for Friday the 13th. Skylar doesn't want that date, so they pick the 16th. And then Skylar goes back to the office for Ted's birthday. And we see, or I remember this being a little bit of a hint of Skylar having something going with Ted that didn't seem right. It's late in the day. There's only 1 hour left in the workday and the business day. And Skylar's going to go back to work after having this pretty intimate moment with her and her husband and her doctor and the baby, picking a birth date and a C-section and all that. And then she's going to go back to work for Ted's birthday. I don't know, it just raised a little bit of an alarm at the time, and it turns out to be somewhat true that she's got something cooking with Ted. And I also noticed on the rewatch that Skylar looks just glowingly beautiful at this point in this series, in this episode. She's wearing a black dress, and her face is just radiating, and Her hair is really sweet looking, and she just looks really good. She looks healthy and very, very pretty. In the next cut, we see Jesse is a mess. His house is a wreck. And Jane is there sleeping, kind of in the middle of the day, sleeping when she should be awake and being productive. There are empty bottles everywhere, beer bottles, drug paraphernalia, everywhere in the living room, in the bedroom, on the nightstand. And Jesse says, let's get away. Let's go out for a while. You might remember Jane asking Jesse to do that a little while earlier in the series. Let's get out of here. I know you're down. Let's get out of here and do something. Now Jesse's saying that to her. And we just see Jane reach over and pick up the bag of crystal, and looks like she's getting prepared to smoke it, and probably not for the first time that day, or that first time in the last couple days. So it is Ted's birthday. We go back to the office, and we see that uncomfortable, boy, is it ever uncomfortable, scene of Skylar singing Happy Birthday, Mr. President of Beneke Fabrications. It's the Marilyn Monroe song that she sang to Kennedy, but here Skylar sings it to Ted. And just queasily uncomfortable. But we get through that. Walt is talking now to Saul about missing the contact at the Poyos restaurant. We know, of course, that contact was supposed to be Gus, but Walt has missed it, and he's talking to Saul about that. Walt just says he wasn't there, and Saul tells him it's over.
Call him back.
I'm sorry.
Yes, you can. Call him, Saul.
Hey, first of all, I never called him, all right? I called the guy who called the guy who called the guy. Second of all, it's over. Understand? With this particular individual, all you get is the one shot.
So it's interesting that Saul knows people who only give people one chance. We see this again later in the series, of course, with another important character who only gives people one chance, and then once you use that up, that's it. But that's it, Walt. He tells Walt he has had one chance, and Walt is kind of screwed after that. Saul also looked very pissed off at this point. Like, I gave you the chance and you blew it. You could get one shot, and I gave you a really good shot and you blew it. You can just see the disappointment on Saul's face. The one shot aspect of it, you only have one chance to it, for me, it added an interesting seriousness to all of this. Like, these crimes are serious now. Everything's serious and deeper, much deeper than the comedic Saul that we've known up to this point. He's connecting these guys with people that are serious. They don't mess around. You can't screw it up and just go back the next day and try again. So this was a deeper element to Saul. It made everything a little bit more serious when we think of Saul and we see what he does with these connections. So Walt goes back to Poyos on his own. There's an interesting juxtaposition here of Walt hearing from Saul that you only get one chance. It makes us see that Saul was serious, but it also ramps up Walt's level of participation and his resolve here, that even though Saul says you only get one chance, he goes back in on his own to talk to this or to find this criminal connection that he needs to make his business operation reach the next level. And he goes back to Poyos to find the connection, to explore further. We see some more customer exploration. We get a close-up of a few customers in the Poyos Hermanos restaurant. And Walt sits there and waits for hours and hours, and he finally gets to talk to Gus. So Gus tries to rebuke him a couple times. You know, if you have a complaint, go to the website and all this. But Gus's facade finally disappears, and he tells Walt, look, we're not at all alike. You're not cautious. Your partner's a drug addict. You have poor judgment, and I can't work with somebody with poor judgment. It doesn't matter that you have great product, that pure product is not the only factor. And then curiously, Gus asks him why he works with Jesse. He asks him why he works with a drug addict, and Walt says, pretty much because he does what I say. I can trust him. And Gus then asks how much product he has, and Walt tells him 38 pounds. So some of this has convinced Gus to give Walt the second chance. I'm not sure exactly which it was. Maybe his professionalism will outweigh Jesse's risk, and that Walt says Jesse will do what he says to do, and that he can trust him. But Gus does give Walt another chance. We don't know for sure yet that this is the case, but Walt asks if he'll be hearing from Gus, and Gus says, "I have your numbers." And then drops him with the final line of advice that you can never trust a drug addict. And I also thought at this point it was interesting that that Gus doesn't trust drug addicts, and yet they're the integral part to his whole empire of meth distribution. His whole business model essentially relies on the consumption of these drug addicts, of his product, and yet you can't count on them, you can't trust them. Kind of an interesting paradox there. And we don't really know it yet in the episode timeline, but we do know now that Walt has convinced him to give him this chance. Skyler's catching up on the accounting discrepancies back at Beneke. The discrepancies are essentially underreported revenue, so money has come into Beneke that hasn't been reported and therefore hasn't been taxed. So that's not good. And Ted tries to explain it away as a mistake, how sometimes their sloppy accounting just leaves these mistakes. But eventually he owns up to it. And as he owns up to it, he gives Skyler the, "All right, you got me. You got me." Just like Walt did with Hank at a latter point in the series. An interesting mirror of that point, I thought. I didn't catch it when I had first watched the series and Hank and Walt had that little interaction. That little comedic, "Hey, you got me," you know, sarcastically, almost like making a joke out of it that I'm not the guilty one. But here it is. It was obviously the same statement and the same quasi joke. It's really, you know, kind of a joke statement, but she really had caught him at that point. And at the time we see Hank and Walt do it, Hank really had caught Walt, even though he didn't know it yet at that point. I also saw a nice contrast with Ted's history of how Beneke was built. His dad had built Beneke up from nothing. And at Beneke, we make things here, and it's all falling on hard times now. So we see around Beneke in the background, we see they're actually making things. They're a fabrication company, so they're making, like, looks like metalworks and ducting and vents and stuff, but things literally that you can put your hands on that are used in other businesses and construction and production of other things. They literally make things, and yet they're falling on hard times. And while the counterpart to that is Gus's business of the meth, is just distributing this product that's like a bane. It's just a negative poison product for people, and his business is thriving. And I just recognize that as a weird counterpoint to Beneke making something real, you know, substantial and positive, but failing, and Gus distributing this horrible product and thriving and making himself, you know, essentially rich by doing it, building an empire out of it. Ted asks Skyler not to report any of this, and she says she won't turn him in, but she also won't be a part of it, and she walks out the door. Jesse's getting high. He's screening his calls and sitting at home just looking super depressed and dark. The phone rings, and it's Pete, Skinny Pete, leaving a message about Combo's funeral. Jesse's missed the funeral, and you can tell it really weighs on him. And so Pete goes through a few descriptions of the funeral, how Badger made it up from Fresno. I guess Badger may be in some release program from prison or from temporary security, and he was let go to see the funeral. Of some kind of, you know, some kind of release. But I thought that was interesting. I don't know the answer to that or if that's even true, but I just thought it was kind of interesting that Badger had come from Fresno. But Pete says, "Hey, you must have been up to something more important, that you would miss this funeral, but that's cool. Talk to you later." And all this is just super weighing on Jesse. He's just looking really unhappy and really troubled. Jane comes in and introduces him to heroin. This is another huge crossroad in Jesse's life, and obviously ultimately in Jane's life. She has this little package of heroin, this little heroin kit. We see some really cool technical tricks with the music and the video shots of Jesse getting high and floating up above the bed, and the ceiling disappears and Jesse floats to this kind of ridiculously high point in the room with Jane in the background preparing her fix. Really cool, creative, technical stuff with the videography and the sound and all that. Now, the next few scenes in this episode are really short, and brief, and they cut between each other really quickly, but they're strikingly important. We see another shot of Beneke. Ted's working, looking at paperwork in the office, and through the window we see Skylar pull up. She's weighing a decision in her mind. She doesn't get out of the car immediately. She thinks about something, but then eventually she walks in. Next, we cut quickly to Walt's classroom. We hear the vibration of the phone. The Walt's walking around the classroom. The kids are taking some sort of a test or a quiz, and they all start to check their phones, but it is up in the ceiling, and it's vibrating, so Walt makes a joke about faulty pipes or something. But he checks the phone after the class is dismissed, and it's a message from Poyos. So Walt goes in, and Gus is gone that day, but Victor talks to Gus and tells him about the meeting.
38 pounds, $1.2 million, truck stop, 2 miles south of exit 13 on the 25. 1 hour.
What?
1 hour, you in or out?
In, absolutely, but I just need a little more time.
1 hour, if you miss it. Don't ever show your face in here again.
So I guess as a criminal, it's really super important to be punctual. And we see Walt struggle to meet the timelines that Victor has directed him to follow here to meet at this specified location within an hour, or in an hour exactly, at this point that he's going to do this transfer from Walt with the meth and the money. This kind of tags on to my earlier observation, I think, that these guys aren't messing around. You can't be late for this. You can't miss it. You can't bring part of it. You can't bring, you know, another person along. You got to do it exactly the way it's outlined or it's not going to work at all. It just added a whole element of urgency and perfection that's needed to make this thing fly. Like, these guys just aren't messing around. You know, you don't get second chances in this next level of the distribution phase of the product that these guys are creating. So Walt really has to hustle now to find Jesse and the product. Next, we go to a quick cut of Skylar. She's getting labor pains, and Walt gets the phone call from her while he's at Jesse's house trying to break in and find Jesse. He's pounding on the door and actually breaks the door to find his way into the bedroom in the back of the house. And Jesse and Jane are stoned and asleep in bed in the middle of the day. So Walt gets Jesse alert enough to finally mumble the location of the meth in the kitchen. And the meth is under the sink, 38 pounds. It's going to be on its way to Gus and Victor. And it looks like as Walt's scrambling around there getting the meth all together, that it's packed up in 19 two-pound bags, or close to two-pound bags, so... As Walt's doing this, he's grabbing all the meth and getting ready, and he's just literally scrambling on the floor trying to pack all this stuff up. He gets the text that the baby is coming, and that's the end of the episode. So it was really kind of a cool cliffhanger at that point. We don't know what's going to happen with Jesse and Jane because of the drugs. We don't know what's going on with the baby. We don't know if Walt's going to make it to the transfer site on time. And just a very, very cool cliffhanger. At the time, it was only 1 week, so it wouldn't take long to find the answer to some of these questions. The meaning of the show name, I think, Mandala, is a Sanskrit word meaning the circle of life. And we saw the circle of life literally in the first and last scenes of the show. Combo gets killed, and Skylar gives birth, or Skylar going into labor to give birth. We see Saul giving great advice, albeit criminal advice, I got to admit that, but it's great advice. They needed to amp their game up to make everything work for this, you know, for this next level of distribution. It amped up Walt's game. It got him into the A leagues, the big leagues of drug distribution. So while it accelerates his descent, it actually adds his status as a drug king. So we see that go up. We see Saul as a huge part of that. Without Saul, that connection never would have been made, even though Walt had to put a little bit of a cherry on top by going back twice to see Gus. That would have never, ever happened without Saul. So Saul has essentially elevated them with his advice and with his connections above being just street-level bangers and hanging with the Tucos of the world. He's elevated them up into this big-time crime scene now. The next scene with Saul is 212, episode 12 in the second season. It's called Phoenix. We'll go through that next time. And I just want to say thanks for listening. And if you have any questions or comments or things you want to talk about with either Better Call Saul or any of these episodes along the way, past or present, for Breaking Bad as we're doing these recaps, drop us a line in Facebook/ Better Call Saul podcast, or at Scathing Tweets on Twitter, or you can write to us at support@westcoastproject.com. And you can always find this and any and all of our episodes at West Coast Project. We've done True Detective and Fargo and Louie and Orange is the New Black. So we're doing a lot of pretty cool television shows. And that's about it. So we'll talk to you next time on Phoenix for Better Call Saul.
Living is a dream when you make it seem enchanted. Lovers take for granted all the world's aglow. They ought to know when you touch a star, then you really are enchanted. When your dreams are slanted through a lover's eyes.